This is the Andy Pollin Hour on Washington's new home for sports, ESPN 630, the sports capital.
And we're rolling for an hour today. Tony's coming up at 11 o'clock, and I'm anxious to hear if he talks about Barack Obama giving a salute to the 20 years of PTI. If you watched on Friday, that was just tremendous. Obama was great, and he knows them. He's played golf with them, but to see the President of the United States salute you for a television show, which Tony said would last 2 weeks, is pretty remarkable, so I'm looking forward to that. Mike Callow is in today. He has just gotten back from Green Bay. We'll get to that in a second. Bram is going to join me at 10:20 to, as he always does, the day after, recap what happened yesterday. And we'll also talk about something I read over the weekend regarding the Beatles, which just blew me away. And we'll talk about that at 10:45. But Mike was at Lambeau Field yesterday, obviously an incredible experience for anyone who gets to go. I guess this is your first time there?
Yeah, first time. And there are a few things now in the modern era that live up to the hype that absolutely did and outkicked it. I mean, it was awesome. The people really make it there. And Wrigley Field, Fenway, Lambeau for me. I mean, it's like those are the same tiers now. It's an amazing place. It's magical.
I've been to the first two. I went to Fenway Park actually in 1984, before all the big screens and the T-shirt shooting and all the other crazy stuff that they do. And that was like a baseball cathedral at the time. Mm-hmm. And there was just the hushed tones of the PA announcer and nothing else. And then Wrigley. Last time I was there was 2009, so it started to modernize, but it was really cool.
That's still before the big renovation.
Yeah,
and that's when I was there too. I was there 3 or 4 years later. There are no huge screens there yet, and that's what I loved about that part too. Yeah.
So they're tremendous places to go. But I mean, what struck out for you? What was the thing that really made Lambeau so much different? Well, obviously the FedEx Field, but like other football venues.
Well, I would say this too. I was with my brother. And we go to a lot of games. We have Washington season tickets. Mm-hmm. He did a lot of comparing to the two. And I said, just know you're comparing maybe the best experience in sports to maybe the worst experience in sports as a daily, as a game day thing. But standing out, it was the people. I mean, from the second we landed, how nice people were. Mm-hmm. Walking in, they want to know where you're from. By the third or fourth set of people that come up to you and say, party with us afterwards, you realize it's not just a, something shady, like it might be in a city or whatever. You realize they're actually good people and they want to hang out with you. And it was the people, man. That was my favorite thing about it. But the stadium was great, but the people made it even better than it was.
And like Wrigley, it's a neighborhood, right?
Yes.
I mean, people park on lawns there.
And tailgates are out of houses.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nuts.
Yeah. I guess are there any sports bars right next to the stadium or anything like that?
There's one across the street with like they do like a tailgate experience type thing. We didn't really have time to go into that, but that was popping before the game and a ton of people there. But it was like I said, magical is the word I use. It's the people there though that really, really made it
fabulous. All right, let's get to the good and the bad, and we'll get to Bram about 10:20 with his thoughts on what happened yesterday. But this I thought was the best post game comment that I heard, and this was Jonathan Allen talking about where they are through seven games.
We're such a better football team than what our record says, but at the end of the day, you can only go by what we've done. So we're 2-5, and that's just who we are. Losing teams find ways to lose games, and winning teams find ways to win games. And right now, we're finding ways to lose.
I mean, that's it in a nutshell. Not that, and this is the way I felt watching at home. I don't know if you felt this in the stadium, but even without the mistakes that they made, and there were many of them, the three trips in the red zone where they didn't get any points, and the two bad turnovers, and just the silly things that they did, I still felt that, just like Allen said, good teams find a way to win, and somehow or another, Aaron Rodgers is going to win that game.
No, 100%. It felt hopeless after the first miss, honestly, because you're thinking you got to be so aggressive to win this game.
Yeah.
And not to actually have the chances that you did and then not do it, he's absolutely spot on. I thought it was hopeless on the first time. Then the second time you really do it. And then the third time they're trying, you're kind of like, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter what's going to happen here. They don't have anything.
Yeah, so let me play this. This is Aaron Rodgers after the game. And it's not so much what he says, but listen to the tone. He sounds like he's just kind of bored. It's like it's like when you beat your five-year-old brother in ping pong, you know, you're supposed to win. So just the tone of what Aaron Rodgers said about winning this game tells you a lot here.
It was nice to get Bobby going. It was nice to get Allen a bunch of touches. We didn't run the ball very well. We didn't protect great first half. Good front, really good front for first-rounders. But didn't protect necessarily that well, and we had some opportunities if we just hold up a little bit longer on some plays. I had to kind of deal it and get rid of it. So, but I feel like we're close. We got to keep finding ways to get the ball to our guys in space. But when our defense is playing like they did today, we're going to be tough to beat.
You know, four first rounders. You know, like, oh yeah, hey, that's a nice try. You know, like they sacked him three times. And he may have been able to avoid it. And Allen made a very good point. He said sacks are overrated because a lot of times the quarterback can throw it away. And Rodgers chose not to do that, playing it safe. But, I mean, this was, Mike, I thought, their best defensive performance of the year. And it wasn't nearly going to be good enough in this game.
100%. And I actually was thinking that yesterday. Those three sacks looked good on the scorecard, mm-hmm. but really they meant nothing right. in terms of the actual game. And Rodgers was great at getting rid of the ball and the few scrambles that he had where he just killed them, too. So,
right.
I'm exactly with you on that.
Taylor Heinicke made some plays. The 40-yard touchdown pass to Terry McLaurin when he kind of slipped and he got out of a tackle to make that. That was good. The 38-yard run he ran for a career-high 95. That was on the good list. How about this? This is an amazing stat. They didn't punt. First time they didn't punt, and I remember this game very well. This is a game that they played in Arizona before the bye. I think they were 6-1 going into it, and they lost 16-15 because they missed an extra point. But they didn't punt in that game. It's the last time that they didn't punt in a game. Three times in 90 years they haven't punted
wow.
in a game,
wow.
and they've lost all three. and it's also that Tress Way is one of their best weapons.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of a good and a bad on that. It's difficult to look at it that way. Now, the bad. You know, Taylor Heinicke is playing about the best you can expect from him right now, which is really bad because you're not developing anything here. You know, he's not your quarterback of the future. He may get better at a few other things. He's probably a guy that you're going to want to keep around as a backup. He tries hard, but he's not a starting quarterback. So this is a road to nowhere with him this year.
Yesterday solidified the spot. He's a backup.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that either.
Right.
They need a backup quarterback, but yesterday solidified that. But what sucks about yesterday is they actually changed it up a little bit. They let him run that option for once,
mm-hmm.
and he did have a few moments, but you can largely tell you just can't depend on him to win a game.
Yeah, and sooner or later, he's going to get hurt. He's a small guy,
yeah.
and he is learning to slide. Now, that's kind of the double edge of what happened on that play where he went down at the 1 yard line because
yep.
he could see the safety was coming to blow him up mm-hmm. at the goal line. And they've been on him. You know, watch yourself. He did hurt his shoulder in what was his most famous play as a Washington football player in the playoff game last year against Tampa, where he dove at the goal line and hurt his shoulder. And they said, you know, you got to be more careful. So he's overly careful on that. I guess you can look at this as a bad rule, too, in that clearly his intent was not to give himself up at the goal line.
Yeah.
So the referee should have some leeway there, I think. But you'll notice that Ron Rivera didn't put up much of a fuss in the postgame. And the reason is Rivera's on the competition committee. So Rivera was in on this as they were discussing this. Now, maybe shame on him for not coaching him up a little bit better. But you also would say to your quarterback, much like when Gus Frerotte banged his head into the into the wall at FedEx Field after scoring a touchdown in 97 and knocked himself out of the game, North Turner said, I never thought I had to tell a player not to headbutt a wall.
Right, right.
And so you almost want to say, if you're Ron Rivera, I never thought I'd have to tell a player not to dive into the end zone.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I don't know how you look at that. But one field goal in four trips in the end zone. Boy, if you want to get well as a defense coached by Joe Barry, you play Washington. 15 times teams had been in the red zone this year against Green Bay. 15 times they scored touchdowns. 4 times Washington got in yesterday. They came away with one field goal. So I would put that on the bad list. Also, eight times in Green Bay territory, they get only 10 points there. Third down conversions, still a big problem. The Green Bay was 6 for 12 on the third downs. And you could also throw in the, and I think the most insulting thing of all, it's a scoreless game. It's 4th and 3 at the 17-yard line. They didn't even think about it. They just come out and go and score a touchdown. That's total disrespect for that defense. So I would even throw that in. So now you're really looking at 7 for 12 on third down, which is, and they're historically bad, right? They're hovering around 60% now. They're among the worst ever. Antonio Gibson. This is the problem with him right now, and this is something that if it doesn't get fixed, it's going to shorten his career. He's got fumbleitis right now, and in 7 games, he's fumbled it 4 times. They only lost it once yesterday because Chase Roullier recovered, but that's a problem. You cannot have a running back who coughs up the football, and if that doesn't get fixed in a hurry, they're going to have to find somebody else who can, as they say, tote the pill. So I put that on the bad list. And the schedule, I got to put that on the bad list as well. I'm looking at now, this, you know, things can change, injuries can happen. Nobody expected Kansas City to be as bad as they are. You know, there's some teams left on the schedule which look unbeatable right now, and that may change. But right now, there looks to be 4 games left that they can win. At Carolina, November 21st. Then they play at Philadelphia on December 19th and here on January 2nd. And then at the Giants on January 9th. That's it. So this
Seahawks
is
Monday night? I think they could win that one.
If Russell Wilson may be back for that.
Even if he is back, I think they've got a
shot. You can beat Russell Wilson?
I think he's got a shot. I'm just wouldn't discount that one. I don't think it's the Chiefs or Brady. That's all I'm getting at.
Okay.
There.
Well,
it's difficult.
Yeah, and look, it's possible that they lose one of these games and they win one of the ones that they're not supposed
to
win.
Of course.
But, you know, what you're looking at is a team that's probably 5
at
to
most,
maximum
yeah.
7 wins.
Yeah, yeah.
With a quarterback that you're not developing, even if you get Ryan Fitzpatrick back at some point this year, is he your quarterback next year? Probably not. Unless they just come up completely dry in the draft or in free agency. And Ben Standing had a report that that the teams are shying away from Washington just because of Dan Snyder. Like they don't want to do business with him. He talked to a bunch of people around the league. Speaking of Snyder, Peter King with a couple of notes in his Monday morning column today. One, that there's going to be league meetings this week in New York. First time the owners are getting together in a couple of years because of the pandemic. And the inquiry into the football team and the emails and all that stuff is supposed to come up. But Tanya Snyder, he says, will be representing the team with husband Dan still on double secret probation and not fully involved in team functions. He goes on to say, I'll be interested to see when Dan Snyder gets his full authority back. It keeps getting put off, and no one is certain when Commissioner Roger Goodell will fully reinstate him. Suspicions will rise that he's being kept in the doghouse because the league may think he or his reps are behind the leaking information that got John Gruden dismissed and tarnished former club president Bruce Allen and legal counsel Jeff Pasch. So, you know, again, there's been no definitive statement on whether or not Snyder is suspended. They
just
said
there never was an official movement on him.
They just said he was stepping away from day to day and he was concentrating on a new stadium. Have you heard anything about a new stadium?
No.
Nothing. Maybe he's working behind the scenes feverishly day and night talking to people, but it appears the district doesn't want to deal with him. I don't think Virginia is going to happen. And Larry Hogan has already said we're out. So, you know, what kind of progress is he making right now?
The only thing I could think of is maybe he's saying everyone needs to be quiet.
Because I guess.
Remember there was that time where Hogan said he was negotiating and Virginia said we'd love to have him. And even DC kind of was flirting with it. Maybe they're trying to keep it quiet. But you and I know how this works. Usually noise is being made if something like that's going down behind the scenes. And there's none. There's nothing.
The only thing we've seen so far, and this is before the Bruce Allen leaked emails, was Dan Snyder touring Los Angeles, right? He was looking at their stadium with Jason Wright, and his wife may have been with
him. Tanya was with him in the background.
They were just, and he started to talk to the media, and then Wright, you know, just kind of took it from there. Yeah. Oh, you know, we're looking for the best of each stadium.
TMZ tip-off is what I call that one.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that's right. It was TMZ that had the exclusive there.
You know, happened to be around a stadium on a non-game day in the middle of the day, right?
Yeah.
You know?
So, yeah, so here we are. I mean, this is the state of the team, and I think Jonathan Allen put it as well as it can possibly be put. Losing teams find a way to make plays to lose the game, and it's not just the plays that they're making to lose the game, it's not just the mistakes, it's the fact that there's no real light at the end of this tunnel. I mean, if this team was playing right now the way it was playing with Dwayne Haskins, you might say, okay, you know, we're seeing improvement a little bit week to week, and we have seen that with Taylor Heinicke. But the brick wall is he doesn't have an NFL arm.
Yep.
He's not an NFL quarterback. And there were like two or three throws. I mean, especially when you see the contrast of what we had yesterday.
Of course,
we have the Hall of Famer who can just put it on a dime.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a different game that you're watching. And so this is why you got to keep swinging for the fences and to find these guys. And when this rumor popped up last week and it was tamped down by the team to all the beat people that they weren't going to go after Tua Tagovailoa, I said, why not? You know, if it doesn't work out, fine, you move on. But maybe he's a franchise guy. You know, look, Joe Burrow looked good last year. He didn't look this good. You know, right now, Joe Burrow looks like he's the guy.
For sure.
But you wouldn't have said that even before he got hurt a year ago.
No, not at all. I mean, he looked good enough.
Yeah.
He looked better than Daniel Jones' rookie year, but you knew he had it, kind of. Let's see how he puts it together. He has already in year two.
Yeah. The fact that Cincinnati has found a franchise quarterback for the first time since Carson Palmer, and Carson Palmer might have ultimately led them to a Super Bowl if he didn't get his knee blown up in that playoff game against Pittsburgh. And Joe Burrow has already had that knee injury, and he's come back, and he looks really, really good. I mean, of course, Baltimore's had a lot of injuries, but to blow them off the field like they did yesterday was pretty remarkable. Also, did you hear about the woman that wandered into the broadcast booth for the Ravens?
So we saw it before we actually got on the plane yesterday. We saw it. I did not get a chance to hear it. Was there actual audio of that?
I forget who the color guy is. Jerry Sandusky does the play. But it was something like he asked her a question and she said, I'm looking for a drink, and she a couple of sheets to the wind.
Oh man.
So I'm sure Bram didn't have that problem at Lambeau Field, but we'll ask him. Maybe I would think that the Lambeau is pretty buttoned up. I think they got their security under control nobody wanders into the visiting broadcast booth. But we'll get Bram's thoughts on what he saw yesterday at Lambeau Field and what's ahead for them. Andy Pollin along with Mike Callow, you're listening to the Andy Pollin Pollin Hour, ESPN 630.
The Andy Pollin Hour on ESPN 630, the sports capital.
Tony's coming up at 11 o'clock. Bram Weinstein, the voice of the Washington football team. You hear him every day here on ESPN 630 from 3 to 6. He joins us after every game, and he's back from Lambeau Field. Not his first time there, as he told us last week, but first time as a broadcaster, as a play-by-play broadcaster. How was it sitting high above the legendary Lambeau?
That was so cool. That's a total, I know how lucky I am yesterday. That was really, really, really cool to get to do that. And I'm jealous of Wayne Larrabee, who's been doing it for 25 years, walking into that place and hopefully not taking for granted. You feel the history in that place. It's a pilgrimage and it's cool. And I know Callow was there yesterday. You probably talked to him a little bit about it. You know, the tailgating scene, the whole town is taken over. You land in the airport and the flight attendant says, welcome to Titletown, USA, go Pack, go. And, you know, it was funny. I was walking in with D'Angelo yesterday to go into the stadium in the morning. And he was like, man, I wish our stadium was like this. And I'm like, it was. That was RFK. It was like this. And it really harkened a lot of feelings of whatever they do with this next stadium, that wherever the location is, you know, because I know there's a lot of politics to have to figure out where it's going to go. But when they finally settle on where it is, if they, I hope that they take a lot of time, not just making it look like SoFi or the Atlanta Stadium or whatever, you know, sleek modern look they want, but to really think about the atmosphere in and around it, because it's Mecca for the NFL up there. It's just an amazing place.
Well, Snyder has said, I guess the last time he did an interview, which was 7 years ago with Chick Hernandez, that he does want seats that bounce up and down. So we'll have that if in fact that happens anytime soon. All right. I don't know how you could see it from where you sat. From the television set, it looked like Taylor Heinicke made the Lambeau leap without too much trouble. He said it's a lot harder than it looks once you get there. I mean, I don't know if that encapsulates, you know, what their season has been all about. But boy, just the feel of what happened in that sequence was just so deflating. It seemed to suck the life, at least from what I could see on the television, out of them.
You mean after he did the Lambeau leap? You think it did?
No, and that the fact that they had to call the play back, and then he was stuffed again on fourth down. I'm talking about the whole sequence there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yesterday to me was literally missed opportunities.
Yeah.
You know, I knew it. The second Rob Domofsky's covered the Packers for ESPN forever. He was on the show earlier in the week. And when he said out loud, you know, the Packers are 15 for 15 giving up a touchdown in the red zone this year, I went, oh, man, like, you just jinxed it. And of course, right on cue, you know, 4 for 4 they are. And in some ways, really inexplicable. I mean, that rule with Heinicke is—it's the rule. It's right. He is down. His knee—the second his knee went down at the half-yard line, the ball wasn't over the line. It's a dead play, you know, at that point. So, unfortunately, that's the rule. He can—I know he said afterwards, "I thought I was in." He wasn't. You know, that is.
No, he wasn't.
You can hate the rule. You can hate the rule, but that's the rule. And then I, you know, of all the calls down there, the try to quick snap, go spread on the half-yard line on a fourth and goal from the half-yard line, I thought was. Ambitious might be a way to put that, and to sneak with him, and that obviously blew up in their face. And then of course they couldn't get the completion on the 4th and 3. Yesterday to me was literally all about missed opportunities. They had, for the second straight week, like, on paper you look at Green Bay or Kansas City and you go, oh, that's a Super Bowl team, and they might be, but you are catching them with the 23rd ranked passing offense because they are missing people and offensive linemen that actually had become a run first team. They only had one 300 plus yard pass day coming into the whole thing. Their defense was missing Jair Alexander, Kenny King, Preston Smith, Za'Darius Smith. Like, you're missing a lot of people. So it was ripe for, if Washington didn't kill themselves with their own mistakes, to maybe pull something off. And honestly, he doesn't dive for the end zone and he goes in, or they don't have a field goal blocked, or they do score on that 4th and 3. I don't know what the result would have been yesterday, but here we are.
Yeah, well, I'll get to that in a second. As far as the rule goes, I don't know if you heard the Ron Rivera post-game news conference, but he didn't really put up much of a fuss because he's on the competition committee. So he knows it was the right call. But it seems to me that you have to give the official a little bit of latitude. You have to make that a judgment call in saying, was he giving himself up, or was he just playing it safe because he knew the safety was coming over to blow him up at the goal line and he wanted to get in as safely as possible? I think you have to give him that, because there's no way Taylor Heinicke was giving himself up at the 1 yard line.
I agree, he wasn't. On the safety issue rule, which is why all of these are in place with quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. The second a body part touches the ground, the play's over no matter what. And therefore, by his knee going down, he was done.
Right.
So even if, and I agree with you, he wasn't, it was weird too. It was like he took a bad step or something. Mm-hmm. Like it was an awkward dive. It is really, for him, it was, man, that's some intervention coming in and messing him up. Because of all the things you can complain about with him, he's actually quite in control of his body and diving and sliding and all. Like, this isn't RG3 where you're like, get down, man, or like, get out of bounds. Like, it's never like that with him. He's completely in control of it. I think he must have taken a bad step or something somewhere, because it was very awkward the way he, like, kind of dove for it. But even if, to your point, like, he clearly wasn't giving himself up and he was diving. Once the knee hit, it's over, because of health and safety for quarterbacks. They blow plays dead immediately at that point. And so there's no recourse for it at all.
To your point too about you know, the plays that they missed, and maybe it's a different game if things change. My feeling was, watching Aaron Rodgers, that he was going to do whatever he needed to do. I mean, a lot of what they did was to burn clock. Even the big drive that Washington had, they were kind of letting them in a prevent defense, you know, eat clock and not get down the field. So it there were opportunities. It just felt like whatever Green Bay needed to do to win that game, they're going to win that game.
Well, it's nice when you have a Hall of Fame quarterback,
yes,
isn't it?
Absolutely. You
know? And this team hasn't since Sonny Jurgensen.
Yeah.
So,
two and 90 years, Sammy Baugh and Sonny Jurgensen, and they've had back to back
90 years. And I don't know. My opinion is, if Theismann didn't get hurt when he got hurt, it's possible he would have been part of a number of Super Bowl teams and probably would have been a Hall of Fame quarterback himself. If he had three rings or something like that, I think it'd be hard pressed not to put him in.
He was on the downside though when he got hurt.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. But it's possible.
Yeah.
But either way you look at it, they haven't had a consistent, really good quarterback, really since the 1980s, because even when Gibbs was winning, he was doing it with an old Doug Williams or Mark Rippon for a year or two there. Like, there wasn't this consistent, we haven't had a 10-year run guy. And I know, obviously, they tried with Heath Shuler, Patrick Ramsey, Jason Campbell, RG3. They may have blown it with Kirk Cousins, depends how you want to view that. You know, that they had one that was a very good, at least, you know, a good acumen to play the position, and they let that one get away. But they just have not had, they haven't had something on this level. Even if you loved Cousins, you know, as a player for them and a consistent performer, he certainly isn't this.
No.
And they just have not found this guy. And I think what's really, you know, going to be very difficult, and I think people should brace for in the offseason is, and I don't follow college football as closely as I follow the NFL, but everyone I talk to tells me this is not a quarterback rich draft. In fact, it's a really quarterback poor one. There isn't going to be five guys going in the top 15 this year, or if they are, it's going to be reaches. Like, these are not, this is not Trey Lance, Mac Jones, Trevor Lawrence. It's not these type of talent coming out. And you know, Washington's not going to have the first overall pick anyway, right? So we're going to be in this same kind of quandary of trying to figure out who is the veteran who's available, who might be hopefully not just a Band-Aid, but the right person for them. What's the price going to be? They haven't been willing to pony up the price to get the upper level veteran yet. So we may be talking about similar problems this particular offseason, because it doesn't look like they're going to find their answer in the draft.
Well, the other troubling thing about that, we're talking to Bram Weinstein, voice of the Washington football team, on the quarterback front, is what we heard going into the season was, well, they'll be able to attract a guy next year because this defense is taking the next step up, and the next great quarterback is going to want to come here and play with that defense. And we played a cut from Aaron Rodgers a few minutes ago where he kind of yawned his way through his look at this Washington defense, like, oh, they got four first rounders on the front, that's nice. You know, so there isn't anybody who's looking at this defense and saying, wow, put me with this defense and we're going to win a lot of games. They just haven't shown this year that they've taken that next step.
I agree. They have not, and that's probably the singular disappointment of the season to me. You know, in the end, like, the offense, we could talk about all the ways that they could be better, should be doing this. The reality is they actually have a lot of injuries now. They're on their backup quarterback, who was out of the league as of, you know, 10 months ago. So, you know, like, so let's be realistic about what you really think that they should or could do on the field. This team needed to be carried by its defense. It's not being carried by its defense. I don't know specifically why. I do think there's a lot of reasons. It started with up front. I don't think the line was playing in coordination with one another, and they were being taken advantage of. They then suddenly decided to kind of change tack, and you heard them change. Their linebackers was a weak position to start with. It's getting better, but it's a void, and they knew that coming in. And the secondary has been, in my opinion, a massive disappointment for them this year. They spent money on William Jackson. They spent money on Kendall Fuller. They have what is supposed to be a Pro Bowler and a high-paid safety in Landon Collins, who's become a linebacker now. And there's going to be a lot of questions about what they do in the secondary off of what happened this year. But you know, I do think it is worth reminding people they were 1-5 a year ago. People seem to forget that part of it. They were 1-5 a year ago, and it did flip when the competition flipped, and it is going to flip, like, starting this weekend. And Sam Darnold just got benched.
Yeah.
They're going to be playing Carolina in a couple of weeks. Like, they're not going to be playing world beater after world beater after world beater, and that's going to be more on their level. And that's why I do think that, while I'm not trying to get pie in the sky or be overly optimistic, they're not playing Aaron Rodgers every week like they have been, you know, basically for the last, you know, couple of months here.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the schedule, and I looked at it, I see four, you know, winnable games, two of them with Philadelphia, and they got the Giants and the Carolina game, which you mentioned. But, you know, they also have to prove that they can have better consistency.
And, I agree.
And that's why I look at yesterday where I say, you know, maybe that's the best game they played all year, but it wasn't nearly good enough. And how is it going to be good enough even to beat a team that's not nearly as good as Green Bay? I don't know.
We'll find out this week.
Yeah.
Because Denver has, you know, I don't think they've won a game in a month. Their offense can't score any points. They just lost to a
Cleveland.
Team of backups.
Yeah.
So, you know, like that was Cleveland's backup quarterback, a running back I've never heard of, so I don't know. Like, so this is a week, and I know it's on the road, but if there is going to be this marketed, you know, kind of incremental improvement, it's going to have to show up this week, and they got to figure out a way to win, and then they take a breath with the bye and obviously come out of it with a monster on their schedule, but they can at least take a breath and take stock of where they are. I do think they were better yesterday, but I'm with you. Not nearly good enough, and there are a couple of things, like, you know, the reality is, like, New Orleans had the fewest deep plays of the season coming into the game against them. They promptly hit a 72-yard bomb on them. You know, at the end of the game, they're throwing the ball when Jameis Winston is averaging 130 yards passing. They came out throwing the ball. So they look at them and they go, we're going to throw it. I mean, I know this is odd to say. People just don't think of Green Bay this way, but they actually were 23rd in the league in passing. They only had one 300-plus yard day coming into yesterday. They actually become a run-first team. In fact, they ran the ball more in first down than I think it was only two or three other teams that would. So they were running a run first offense, and yesterday that was not the case.
Right.
In fact, at halftime, their two backs had five carries combined. You know, so teams are looking at Washington going, we could throw all over them. We're not scared of your pass rush. We're not scared of your ends. Yesterday, I saw a push and some creativity and a little more aggressiveness up front than I've seen, and I thought that was a very good sign, and we're looking for signs, but in the end, the secondary could not cover that group. Aaron Rodgers still completed whatever it was, 70-plus percent, you know, of his passes, and they still were able to move the ball at will when they needed to against them, and, you know, so there's a long way to go here.
Yeah,
really is.
No question. I mean, it's hand-in-hand, and while you can criticize the front four for not putting enough pressure on, there's such a thing called coverage sacks, and they're not anywhere near that because the secondary, as you mentioned, is so weak. I remember a year where they had Darryl Green, who was still strong, and Chris Dishman, who was a very good corner as well, and they didn't have a very good defensive line, but they got a bunch of sacks because they had great coverage back there, and they don't, their coverage is so bad that this group of first rounders, the four first rounders, they're not doing anything right now. And they did have three sacks yesterday, but some of that, you know, Jonathan Allen said the sacks may be overrated because, you know, a lot of times the quarterback can throw the ball in the dirt, and Rodgers chose not to do that.
Yeah. I thought that they were, I saw, you know, the good sign for me yesterday, really on both sides of the ball, was they did look like a different team. They did do some things that were unusual. They had a couple of different formations, specifically with Seals Jones. It was very different. So they were tendency breaking, and I liked seeing that.
Mm-hmm.
Defensively, I thought that they were more aggressive than they've been. They brought the house a couple times. You have not seen them do very much of that. Rodgers is a sitting duck that way, and he will just take sacks at times. The danger zone with him is the play action stuff. He's
right.
Incredible at it. Once he gets out of the pocket, you're dead. They kept him in the pocket for about as much as they possibly could. So I saw like marketed improvement, but you know, in the end, we want to see the team win. And the reality is they did have an opportunity with just kind of the state of the Green Bay roster yesterday, and yet they walk out of their 14-point losers. You know, I don't know exactly what the moral victory is other than to say it does feel like they're getting a tick better than they have been over the last month or so.
Yeah, and also of concern is Antonio Gibson. Four fumbles in seven games.
Yeah.
You cannot have that. So do they have anybody else? I mean, is Patterson ready to run the ball? Do they have another running back who could play right now?
I'm surprised he has not been given more of an opportunity yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was, I thought, a mildly controversial thing that they did. Not that Peyton Barber is saving anybody's season, but he's a veteran.
Yeah.
He's been around the block a few times. The season got lengthened. Antonio Gibson was coming off of a toe injury. Like, remember that part?
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be in the background, but now he's got all these other things. I felt like coming in, because McKissick is not really a straight running back, he really is more of a receiver than anything, that they needed another veteran presence. If for no other reason, you're just asking too much of Gibson this year, and now we're in a situation where he's just trying to survive with all the different injuries that he has, including the shin injury. I give him a lot of credit for playing through all of this, but there's not a lot of answers behind him. And while, you know, again, I'm not going to sit here and go Peyton Barber would be this humongous difference maker. He was a veteran. They could have leaned on him. He can, you know, carry the ball for a couple series. You see this in a lot of teams now. They have two running backs, two primary running backs. Even Dallas does. They give Pollard a lot of carries down there. Like, I think that this is a void for them. And I wouldn't go so far as to call it. Here's the thing. They thought they were going to lose Patterson if they cut him. They didn't think they'd get him to the practice squad. Mm. Therefore, they kept him. Now, though, they kept him. They have to play him. They need him to play. They need to give Gibson some rest and some time off. He can't carry the load. And they've been reluctant to do so far. And we'd need to ask Rivera why.
Yeah, well, we might find that out today as he holds his news conference. And Chris Blewett survives another week. So that late field goal, that may have been the most important kick that he'll ever make, because I think it saves his job for another week. We'll see.
I mean, not that anybody cares about this, but he made a 62-yard field goal in pregame.
Well, so, that's fine.
And I actually felt pretty good at when I saw him do it. I'm like, oh, okay, all right. So this guy's got a leg. All right.
He's got thin air next week, so maybe that'll help him too. Very good. Thanks, Bram. Talk to you next week.
All right, see ya.
That's Bram Weinstein, voice of the Washington football team, and he'll have much more on the game coming up at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up, something I read over the weekend from David Remnick in The New Yorker, which blew me away, about Paul McCartney and the Beatles. We'll get to that and more as we continue. It's the Andy Polin Hour, ESPN 630.
The Andy Polin Hour on ESPN 630, the sports capital.
Tony's coming up at 11 o'clock, and there's a bunch of sports stuff I want to get to before Tony's show. But this was really amazing to me. I subscribe to The Long Read, which is a series of articles, I should say. They're a series of long-form articles that Don Van Natta puts out as an email every Sunday. And occasionally I find things in there that just are incredible. And David Remnick, who at one time covered the Washington Federals for the Washington Post, is the editor of The New Yorker. And he did a long piece on Paul McCartney. Now, the Beatles, I think it's Thanksgiving weekend, that's, is it Disney Plus or one of them, is supposed to put out this three-part series called Let It Be.
Yep.
Okay, you know about this. Mm-hmm, and this is a lot of footage that was shot as they were, you know, kind of coming to an end as a group in the late 60s, and it hasn't been seen before. So Paul McCartney agreed to this sit-down interview with Remnick. And two things. One, McCartney, he's pushing 80. He looks fabulous. Mm-hmm. I saw him in concert in 2012 when he was 71, did 3 hours, no break. Great, just great. And he said that he works out every morning while watching American Pickers.
Huh.
Yeah, yeah.
Of
all things. And that's not what blew me away, but that was one television thing where I thought, wow, of all shows, Paul McCartney is somehow drawn to, and I don't really get this show anyway, because these two guys, now they've dumped the fat guy with the beard.
Yeah.
So it's Mike and his brother who now ride around. But they go all over the country and they buy stuff and they show you, well, I paid $200 for this and I can make $250 on it. I can make a $50 profit. Well, yeah, but you've spent like $400 on gas to drive there to get it. I don't really get that. But anyway, you learn about the stuff, and I find it interesting. It's comfort food television for mm-hmm. me. And obviously it's something that McCartney has gravitated. This is what amazed me. This happened in 1976. The Beatles, this is John Lennon still alive, so you got all four Beatles. And it's hard to imagine this now, because the Rolling Stones still perform, and Billy Joel, and you know, a lot of great acts are still doing their thing and doing concerts. The Beatles, their last concert was 1966 at San Francisco, and actually Johnny Holiday introduced them, and they said, we're not doing this anymore. Just can't stand the screaming. We can't hear ourselves. we're not doing concerts anymore. And then they broke up in 1969, 1970. So in the 70s, there were people constantly saying, can we get the Beatles back together? You know, like, this has to happen. Even though a couple of Lennon and McCartney had already had solo acts. I think Harrison had two. Even Ringo put out a couple of songs. Mm-hmm. So they were doing well on their own. But people wanted, and there was a report that there had been offered $50 million to get together for what they call a closed circuit concert in those days, much like boxing, that you would go to movie theater and see them perform.
Got it.
And they turned them down. So as a joke, Saturday Night Live, which is like a year old at this time, Lorne Michaels gets on TV and he does this certainly as a joke, but it was very memorable. And here it is.
The National Broadcasting Company has authorized me to offer you a certified check for $3,000. Here it is. Can we get a close-up of this, Dave? Which camera is it on? Move in there. Now, here it is. As you can see, verifiably, it is a check made out to you, the Beatles, for $3,000. All you have to do is sing three Beatle tunes. She loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's $1,000 right there. You know the words, it'll be easy. Like I said, this is made out, this check here is made out to the Beatles. You divide it any way you want. If you want to give Ringo less, that's up to you. I'd rather not get involved. I'm sincere about this. If it helps you to reach a decision to reunite, well then, it's worth the investment. You have agents, you know where I can be reached. Just think about it, okay? Thank you.
Now, here is the remarkable thing about this story. McCartney said he was actually in John Lennon's apartment at the Dakota, and they're watching this live. And he says to Lennon, let's do this. And he couldn't talk Lennon into doing it. But if they had gone over there, they would have had to go through, I'm sure they had a chauffeur, they would have drive through Central Park. It's not that far, and it's you know, 11:30 at a Saturday night. You know, the traffic probably isn't that bad. If they'd have shown up live on Saturday Night Live, that would have been the biggest thing ever in television.
Yes.
It would have been incredible.
Yeah.
Awesome. And he just said, nah, Lennon wasn't in the mood to do that. So anyway, I thought that was amazing. Also, yesterday, I don't know if you hung around for the end of the Tampa game, which was a complete blowout, but Tom Brady is interviewed, and I guess I noticed this on the field, but I really noticed this when he was being interviewed. He's wearing a wristband. And, you know, it's a relatively new offense for him.
Yeah,
it's the second year. But do you remember when Donovan McNabb was here in 2010 and refused to wear a wristband?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I do remember that. Yeah.
So here's the greatest of all time, and he's wearing a wristband so he can know the plays.
It's about like the 10th, you know, 10th on the list of the knucklehead things I know about Donovan McNabb.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're absolutely right.
I mean, I don't know if it would have helped him because he was a bad fit from the beginning.
Wouldn't have helped his conditioning either.
No, the Shanahans were through with him in training camp.
Yeah, right. So yes. He wanted
no part of them. They wanted part of him. He figured he'd go to another team and win a Super Bowl and go to the Hall of Fame. It didn't happen. I think he did go to Minnesota after here and didn't do anything. But he's now, Brady has now got 600 touchdown passes. So I was looking back on the list, and the game has obviously changed. But the two great passers of the 1960s and into the 70s were Johnny Unitas and Sonny Jurgensen. Each of them held the record, co-holders of the record for touchdown passes in a season for a while at 32, which is, you know. But in those days, 32 touchdown passes in a season, it was 14 games, was incredible. So Unitas, in 18 years, threw 290. Sonny, in 18 years, threw 255. Okay, then you flip over. Dan Marino was a touchdown passing machine. Mm-hmm. 420. He's 180 short.
Wow.
Of Tom Brady. Peyton Manning, 539, 61. That's two good seasons. You know, I mean, sure, Brady's been playing longer. You have Drew Brees at 571. Brees was maybe the most prolific passer of his era, and he's 29 short of him. And Brett Favre, who played 20 years, 508. 92 short. I mean, it's just...
I didn't think he'd be that short either. Yeah. He chucked it. I mean...
He was a gunslinger.
Interception leader. I mean...
Yeah, he didn't care whether it was a touchdown or an interception.
Yeah.
He'd come back and sling it.
Man.
So what he is doing is just, to me, one of the most remarkable things that I've ever seen.
Did you ever see it happen with the ball? Did you see that with Mike Evans?
Yeah, that Mike Evans gave the ball to a guy
in
the fan. Yeah. And he gave it back, but I wonder what... Have you heard what they've gotten in exchange?
I was trying to look it up. They said that they came up with some kind of agreement, but not what it was. But that ball was probably worth $500,000, and she or he, I forget if it was a woman or a man,
yeah,
that handed it to, just kind of gave it back like that. Probably left them a lot of money on the table.
What would you hold out for?
All right, so I'll put myself in that person's shoes. If I'm a Bucks fan,
and you're a memorabilia guy,
I am.
Jerseys, hats. So
right.
So what's, if it's, you're not going to get $500,000 in value,
correct?
Back, but what would you have the chutzpah to ask for?
I would ask for a Brady game used jersey.
Okay,
it doesn't have to be from that game, because if they want to hold that, I would get it.
How about a Super Bowl jersey? Would you ask for that? Why not?
I would ask.
You'd ask.
And if they
negotiate,
say no.
Negotiate down.
If they say no, give me a playoff game.
He's got
something
seven,
like,
of them. And doesn't have to be his Tampa one. You could just give me one of the six New England ones.
And here's what I would do as a memorabilia fan. I would say, I would like to meet Brady after the game to get it.
Yeah.
And just make it a... Get an experience out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't be hard to negotiate, because if I was a fan of the team, I would want to, be nice about it and, get hooked up somehow.
Yeah, the footballs are different than baseballs, because... Even when they are kicked into the stands, sometimes they're given back. Like if they miss the net or something like that, the fans will often give them back.
Correct.
It's not like a baseball.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's a little different. I want to rant a second about this college football overtime rule, which they put in. Did you watch the Illinois?
I didn't watch it. I was doing the Caps game. But yeah,
it's awful. This is ridiculous. First of all, the college football rules for overtime stink anyway.
That's true.
I mean, it's like you play football, and now let's settle it with three sets of tennis.
Yeah.
And so once they got through the initial back and forth where each team gets it at the 25-yard line, then they go to something which they thought would shorten the game. So each team alternates one-and-done situations from the 3-yard line. It went to, and they're calling it 9 overtimes. It's really not 9 overtimes.
Right.
It's more like what they did it 4 times the other way. So it's like 5 extra, which really are not overtimes.
Yeah, right.
And it was just ridiculous. At some point I just said, flip a coin. And did the better team win? Yeah, maybe that day, because I think Illinois rolled up about 300 yards rushing. Penn State didn't play well at all. But that's not a satisfying end to me. And I don't like what the NFL has done, where each team has to touch the ball. I mean, but at least it resembles more regular football than what this is in college. This is just ridiculous.
And in the NFL, I will say this, we have had a lot more situations the past maybe 5 years where both teams get a stop, and it actually just turns into a normal game.
Yeah.
I know we get the sudden death every once in a while, but that one actually largely has worked itself out way better.
Yeah, and the other two college football things, when I had Mel Kiper on before the draft, he said that next year's number one to look for would be DJ Uiagalelei from Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
And he got benched in this loss to Pittsburgh, and they've lost 3 games this year. And not only that, he's completing only 55.7% of his passes, which is terrible for a team of that level. 4 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. His passer rating is last in the ACC among qualified quarterbacks. He's got one of those commercials too. He's doing
He got the NIL.
I forget which one. Is it Subway or one of these places? So he's already got that. And the best quarterback in college football right now might be Gonzaga's own Caleb Williams, who started the year on the bench behind another quarterback who was a Heisman Trophy candidate. So this is remarkable. And he had a play. They were huge favorites against Kansas. Kansas has been the dregs of the Big Ten, Big 12 in recent years. They won just 3 Big 12 games in the last 7 years. And they had a play. They were leading, but they needed to maintain possession of the ball. The running back, Kennedy Brooks, was being stopped behind the line of scrimmage. He took the ball out of his hand, stole it away, and ran for a first down. I have never seen that before. That was really incredible. Just
thinking on your head there.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the most heads-up plays I've ever seen. And This guy, he looks like the best quarterback in college football. He's only played a handful of games. He came in the Texas game and rescued them. But he's completing 72% of his passes, 8 touchdowns in 3 games. And he's got to give them 2 more years after this before he gets to the NFL.
There you go.
That's amazing. All right. Thanks to Mike for hanging with me today. He's going to do that again tomorrow. Thanks to Bram for coming on. You'll hear him this afternoon from 3 to 6 as he recaps Washington's loss yesterday and looks ahead. As he said with us, he looks at the schedule and says, you know, there's winnable games there. You know, whether they can do what they did last year, who knows? Even if they do, Dallas at 5-1 looks like they're going to be tough to topple. But he'll have more thoughts on that this afternoon. Anyway, enjoy the rest of the day. I will see you back here tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.